back, funky listeners. You're listening to Funk Radio again. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, it's even cooler for you, Kyle, because you get to be on Funk Radio, not just listen to it.
What? Yeah, so this is... If you've stayed with us this long, then you have serious mental problems and you need to seek psychiatric help.
Until then,
listen to us talk more. Speaking of sticking with us for a long time, if you listeners happen to have caught our second ever episode that we did of this podcast, which apparently happened in fall of 2012, which makes me feel very old.
Yeah.
We actually talked about a handful of funk and soul songs that were being used in TV commercials. Now, I don't remember what inspired that episode, but I remember...
Well, it was our second episode. We had already run out of ideas.
That's true. Yeah, what inspired it was we didn't run out of ideas yet. But I do remember we discussed that song. It was used in, like, the new Windows 8 commercials that were coming out at the time.
Oh. What song were they using? See, it was over 3 years ago.
Express Yourself.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't the Charles Wright one. It was, like, a redo...
Like a cover
by that British kid. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, sort of.
Okay. And I remember I think that was the episode we discussed that. Maybe I'm.
It probably was.
But yeah, I remember we went through some, I guess, soul songs and commercials. Didn't we talk about like a Swiffer commercial too or something?
I think that one was Give Me Just a Little More Time.
Yeah, that's it. Because it was like the broom was being, you know, not used anymore and being replaced by like a Swiffer thing. And
oh no, maybe it was Who's That Lady by the Isley Brothers. Because
oh yeah, you're right.
Because the broom was jealous of the new Swiffer.
Yeah, that's, you're absolutely right. That was that. Okay, let's spend this entire episode rehashing an episode from 4 years ago. So yeah, just to recap, yeah, we talked about soul and funk songs that were used in TV commercials. This topic, this time around, 4 years later, is slightly different in that we're talking about songs that were taken by commercials and slightly altered to reflect more the advertising of said product as opposed to using the original.
Right.
We found a handful of examples. Some are very cringeworthy and very awesome, so...
Yeah. Regarding funk and soul songs being used in commercials, I think, if I remember correctly, we kind of came to the conclusion that that type of music is used a lot in commercials because it's familiar enough to a lot of people, but at the same time, it's not popular enough where it's really expensive to use that music. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, I guess it's probably in that like perfect middle ground.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Where they're not, you know, breaking the bank to make one Pop-Tarts commercial. Because it has a Justin Bieber song in it or something.
Oh, God.
And, you know, obviously I feel like we were able to come up with like a dozen different examples in that one time period, but it's an ongoing thing. I mean, I feel like we could probably have an episode every couple of months if we wanted to with that, but...
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's not really something to come back to all the time. Plus, I don't have TV anyway, so it's hard to do that.
Yeah, I hardly watch commercials anymore. I even have ad blocker on my browser. to avoid that as much as possible.
But we did kind of want to come back to this conversation, like you said, kind of from a different angle, seeing how songs' lyrics specifically are altered from their original version into something that speaks directly to the viewer as advertising a product or a service or something. And, you know, like you said, we have a few different examples, but I also kind of wanted to come at this from the direction of how advertisers try to manipulate us, for lack of a better term, manipulating our emotions by taking something that we are familiar with, like a catchy song that a lot of people enjoy, and then kind of twisting it a little bit to say, you know, you should buy Oreos. And then when you see Oreos in the store, that you think of that song and you think of that jingle and you're like, hey, I should buy Oreos.
Exactly.
I don't think there's really an ethical discussion behind that, but I just think it's interesting that that's kind of one method that advertisers have learned to use over the years.
Yeah. Speaking of jingles, I wonder if that's like a viable career path anymore. You know, that like back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, through the 90s even, there was musical artists that literally just made money writing jingles for products.
Yeah.
But slowly I see jingles being less and less prevalent. I tried to say prevalent and relevant at the same time and butchered both of them. Less prevalent now than they were even, you know, 20 years ago.
I mean, you obviously, you and I grew up with kids commercials in the 90s, and there seemed to be a fair number of those there. I mean, I'm probably not on the level of, like, you know, 1950s when, like, jingles were the complete shit of all things, in a good way. I'm turning into you, Kyle.
Best description ever. The complete shit of all things.
There's an episode title.
I am the Alpha, I am the Omega, I am the shit. Said God.
I can't remember where I was going. Oh, I mean, are there really even jingles for any commercials?
I'm sure if we look hard enough, there are.
It seems like the only ones that ever even try to use them anymore are like really low budget commercials for like some, you know, family company where they're like, come by Worthington's Furniture on 12th Avenue, and we have a song that I'm not singing because I can't think of anything.
Or like used car dealerships, like, you won't get a lemon at Toyota of Orange. Please pay me money for singing that. You know, like that kind of earworm type shit. Yeah, I don't know. Exactly. I think, and maybe because those types of jingles are now used for used car dealerships, maybe they've lost a lot of their luster where they're only associated with more localized brands or cheap things that, you know, respected manufacturers, like card manufacturers or electronics manufacturers, aren't, you know, using jingles to sell their brands so much as like iconic visuals, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Actually, oh, you know what? This brings back a little bit of schooling for me, because I did take an advertising / branding class in college, and we studied a lot of like how it's evolved.
Well, please.
Over the years. Obviously, it's been a number of years, so I can't say a whole lot. But, I mean, I'll just use the 50s as an example. Like, if you looked at, like, a time period like that, in advertising, something was all about the product and, like, listing out, here are all the great things about this new Chrysler or this Coca-Cola. And it's tasty and whatever. But now, how do I say this? Compare a commercial for Coca-Cola in the 50s to one today. And it's clear that branding has become much more of like showing people in a lifestyle where they're having fun and like at the beach with their friends. And oh, by the way, they happen to be drinking Coca-Cola.
I think what you're trying to say, correct me if I'm wrong. It's gone from like advertising the value of the product to advertising how the product makes you feel.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I completely understand. In fact, because I work in a bit of advertising, it's always, it's from a production standpoint about, you know, applying a sort of emotional, what's the word? You're applying an emotional branding to your product to, you know, subconsciously have people elicit certain emotions when they, you know, consume said product, I suppose. So, you know, exactly, in a Coca-Cola, I'm dyslexic tonight, a Coca-Cola commercial, trying to say that five times fast, or an iPhone commercial, or a laptop commercial, it always shows happy people doing, you know, utilizing that product, and it's like, oh, if I use this product, it'll make me have friends and be happy.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, I mean, one thing I gotta say is I think one of the brands that really tapped into that kind of shit early is alcohol commercials. You know, for the longest time, they always just, because they're not gonna be like, here's our alcohol, it gets you drunk faster. Like, they're not gonna advertise the benefits of their product. They're gonna show people drinking their product and being happy and lively, so that when people associate alcohol or their brand of alcohol they associate it with having a good time. And other brands have kind of fallen in line with that consumer logic.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. They've all become alcohol commercials where it's like, hey, if you buy this product, hot girls will lust after you and shit.
Exactly.
And body spray.
Yeah. And I suppose that ties in a little bit with, you know, what we're trying to talk about with the music as well, is that it's trying to do more than sell a product. It's trying to evoke emotions within the consumer, not necessarily even consciously.
Mm-hmm. Even with these songs that we're going to be talking about, it's all about, you know, getting a song stuck in your head on a subconscious level. So, you know, you're whistling the song tune and then you're like, oh shit, I need Oreos or something, you know?
Even though the song was for something else.
Exactly. Well, whatever. I don't know. It's all subconscious targeting.
Exactly. Yeah.
So speaking of subconscious, what are some of the songs that we've stumbled across? We didn't stumble across a ton of them, so we're not going to, you know, drone on about them, but we can hit a few.
Yeah. Two of them we pulled from our childhood. And then one we came across only a couple months ago just because it was really funny. I think we should talk about one that this is one we came up with, but then I was also looking at a couple of lists online of commercials that use songs and alter the lyrics to sell the product. This one was coming up in a lot of those lists too, so it kind of concreted, you know, this is a good decision. Was there was a Cool Whip commercial in 1999 that used a modified version of Cool Jerk by the Capitals, which came out in 1966.
It's an old song.
It's an old song. So I think we've talked about Cool Jerk at least once on the show before. Even actually, I think it wasn't even that long ago that we
Because we talked about it in the when we talked about singles released in 1966, because, you know, it's 50 years later.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. It's only been like a month. But, yeah, so, you know, the refrain of Cool Jerk goes, Cool Jerk, Cool Jerk. And then, so they decide, well, we'll make it Cool Whip. So this is definitely, I think pretty much anyone who grew up in the 90s knows this commercial. And it's, I think this one kind of plays into a little bit of what we were saying with, like, the lifestyle versus the product itself in the commercial. This is kind of a good early example of that. Because it's a big group of people, like some big picnic or something, and they're all eating a lot of tasty food, and Cool Whip just happens to be the star of the show. Because everybody knows that you can't have a picnic without Cool Whip being on everything you eat.
Yeah. I love Cool Whip sandwiches.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to think of some, you know, points of discussion we could kind of talk about in this episode, and one I was thinking about was, I don't even know if I wrote it down now, but it was thinking about how, you know, using the familiarity of a song to grab someone's attention. Like, oh, I know that song. I'm going to watch this commercial. Oh, hey, Cool Whip, that looks tasty. Those people are happy. I want to be happy too. I'm going to sit at home and eat Cool Whip all day. That'll make me happy.
And then get diabetes and die lonely.
But
yeah.
What I was going with, where I was going with that is, what if you don't know the original song? So then you just kind of assume probably that it's an original song that they came up with. Because, I mean, like, as a kid and when I was 9 years old, I didn't know Cool Jerk by the Capitals, personally.
True.
I think if you don't know the original song that comes from, you kind of just assume, oh, that's just some new jingle they came up with. And
yeah,
I wonder if that does anything negative for the original song.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it does only if the people discover the original song after the fact, like we probably did, where, you know, you know the Cool Whip song, and then you hear the original, and you're like, wait a second, that's the Cool Whip song. Only to realize, obviously, that was not, originally made for Cool Whip.
Everything I knew was a lie.
So I don't know if it necessarily diminishes the original artwork, I guess, so much as maybe it diminishes the product, because you're like, oh shit, they didn't even write their own song. They just changed the words of another song that had nothing to do with their product. So if anything, I think it would be the opposite. It wouldn't diminish the artist, it would diminish
the product itself. Because you would think that they were being lazy or something.
jumping ahead of myself a little bit here, perfect example is another song that we are discussing, this song, Book of Love by the Monotones.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea the original song even existed until you sent it to me a couple weeks ago. And I listened to it, and I'm like, why the fuck does this sound so familiar?
Yeah.
And you told me, you're like, oh yeah, it's the same chorus or slightly changed chorus as that very nostalgic commercial, the Nestle Wonder Ball commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, if any of you listeners lived as children in the 90s, you remember those chocolate balls with, like, other candy inside. It was usually, like, I want to say, was this Nestle Wonder Ball, was this branded under that Willy Wonka thing, or was this totally different? Remember they had all the Willy Wonka candy?
No, it was different, because it was, like, Disney / Nestle.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, they had, like, little hard candy shapes of Disney characters inside the ball.
Right.
Or whatever, am I right?
Yeah.
I think they even had Pokemon ones for a half a second. But, every 90s kid knows the Wonder Ball, What's in a Wonder Ball, commercial song.
Yeah.
And for me to realize, oh, crap, that wasn't some awesome, catchy jingle that they wrote. That was just a song by this group, the Monotones, that they just changed for the commercial. It makes them seem even less creative. And I'm just like, oh, shit, this isn't the Wonder Ball. The Wonder Ball song isn't like some awesome, catchy, original jingle that ruled my childhood.
That's a good point. Actually, I want to come back to this, but before we kind of get too far away from the Cool Whip thing, that's fine. I like that this conversation is picking up shits, but...
it needs to be picking up more words, Peter.
I actually kind of want to place two short clips of Cool Jerk and then Cool Whip back to back, so that our listeners can hear both first the original and then the commercialized version of it. So you can see, obviously, they didn't really try to make it too different at all. It's very similar of the two. And it, like I said, if you grew up in the 90s, you probably know that one.
Exactly.
But yeah, back to the Nestle Wonder Ball. It's really funny because that's kind of really the one that kind of sparked this whole episode, because the story behind discovering that was, you know, I haven't used Pandora in like 2-3 years maybe. But I was at work, and I was like, I want to listen to music, but I want to constantly keep changing it. So I just like, I'll use Pandora and I'll just put something on. Within like 2 or 3 songs, it played Book of Love by the Monotones, which I had never heard before until then. And I was like, holy shit, this is the Wonder Ball song. So
that's funny.
That's my...
Yeah, because you sent that to me, and I was like, and you didn't tell me at first. You're like, does this song sound familiar? And listen to it, I'm like, what the fuck? This song sounds so familiar, but I've never heard of these guys before.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's kind of the same reaction from both of us.
Exactly. Fun aside about Wonder Balls is Wonder Balls are actually based off of a German candy called Kinder Eggs, which... which didn't actually have... like hard candy inside the chocolate ball, but an actual toy prize.
Oh, okay.
But they were banned in the U.S. because stupid ass U.S. kids were like, oh shit, chocolate. And they were choking on the toy inside.
That's so terrible.
So they're like, well, let's at least make the thing inside the ball edible as well so that kids don't die. And thus Wonder Balls were born.
That's really funny.
Oh, man. Yeah. I don't know. I remember kids my age still even going on about Kinder Eggs because they had them here for like very short amount of time until they were like, oh shit, we have to ban these.
I've never heard of kids. Kinder Eggs.
I think they were rebranded as something else in the U.S. I don't think they were rebranded as Wonder Balls, but Wonder Balls are kind of based off that same idea.
Okay.
And then they were like, oh, we need to get rid of these because stupid children are choking on the toy inside because we coat it in chocolate or something. I don't know. So yeah, that's fun chocolate history for you, I guess, or candy history. Remember Warheads? Dude, those,
oh yeah.
I remember when I was on, when I would be on the school bus, there'd always be the kids who were like, you know, the Warhead crack addicts who, you know, some kid would dare them, oh, I dare you to put like six of these in your mouth. And then they'd do it and then they would like die.
The thing about Warheads though is that after the first like 15 seconds, then all like the sourness is gone.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like you suck on them for like 10 seconds. It's like, oh, now it's just a sugary lollipop or a sugary thing. Lozenge.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I think the original point you were trying to make with the Wonder Ball commercial is that probably the vast majority of people who saw that commercial didn't know that was based on a doo-wop song from the 50s.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we do a show about a lot of music similar to that, and we didn't know that until just now. So I feel like pretty much no one knows that. You know, like I kind of comes back to the question I was asking earlier. Like, do you think that takes away from the original song at all? Or, you know, does it maybe make the commercial look dumber? Because that's kind of what you were saying about the
cool yeah, whip. I'm of the opinion that it makes the commercial seem dumber, because here's a thought I just stumbled upon. A good handful of the commercials that we've stumbled upon that have these retooled songs are commercials targeted at kids. Mm-hmm. Candy, Cool Whip, other things that we'll get into. And very likely these kids probably have never, you know, experienced songs past whatever is popular in that decade that they live in.
Right.
So do you think that companies find these old songs by these bands that are obviously broken up, you know, long after that, by that time, retool them to avoid having to pay, you know, any copyright to those songs, retool the song slightly and use it in their commercial, because it's a creatively easy way to manufacture a jingle for their commercial targeted at kids without actually having to go through the process of writing their own song.
Yeah, I can see that. Although I would think that trying to fit words for your product to an existing tune would be more difficult than just coming up with something new, especially if that's your profession. But I don't know.
I just see their marketing thought process of like, oh, we need to, you know, have something catchy to sell this product, rather than having to create something that we think is catchy. We can just find something that we already know is catchy, like an old-timey, you know, successful song, like Cool Jerk, and just retool it to cause a sort of, you know, A to B word association with our product or brand, and then it's just like, oh, we've created a catchy earworm type song that gets stuck in people's heads, and they then associate the product with it without us actually having to go through the sort of experimentation process of like, oh, you know, is this song catchy? Does it work with, does it, you know, resonate with, you know, the proper demographics, blah, blah, blah. They're just like, oh, let's pick a song from 40 years ago that was a popular song. Like The Twist or something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's hard to match, you know, wording and match your brand to an old song, but at the same time, that old song has sort of already been market tested, if that makes any sense.
No, that's actually a really good point, yeah. It seems weird, though, because, like, you know, the Cool Jerk, the Cool Whip one, like, that's a pretty easy connection to make.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it just seems so weird to me that that for Wonder Ball they would just randomly pick this song from 50 years prior that very few people have heard, and it's like, hey, let's turn this into a song for candy. And there's no like pun or, you know, anything going on there.
True.
It's I don't know what, but I guess probably a lot of it ties back into what you were just describing.
Because yeah, this one more so than Cool Jerk. The lyrics aren't really the same. It's really kind of just the tune.
Yeah, yeah.
The, you know, the beat, whatever.
Well, in Book of Love, they go, oh, why wonder, who wrote the Book of Love? Or something like that. And then they, in the commercial, it says, oh, I wonder, what's in a Wonder Ball?
Yeah, that's true.
So it's a little bit similar.
Should we play a little clip?
I think we should let our listeners hear the difference, or I guess the similarities. Baby, you know I do, but I've got to see.
do I do? What's in my wonder ball? Who knows what surprises a wonder ball can hide? Yummy, nasty chocolate with candy shapes inside. Oh, I wonder, wonder, what's in my wonder ball?
So once again, that was The Book of Love by the Monotones in 1958, followed by a commercial for the Nestle Wonder Ball from 2000.
Yay.
So those are the two like songs from our childhood that we could come up with in our own heads. There are some other lists online that have other examples that neither of us really recognized.
No.
There was one other... Go ahead.
I was going to say, there was one particular example that I found very entertaining. I want to say it's the 80s. It looks very 80s. The song Do You Believe in Magic by the Love and Spoonful. I think we've discussed them on the show a little bit before.
Yeah.
Was used in a McDonald's commercial. Apparently it says it's from 1992.
Okay.
And that particular commercial... Maybe we'll post it on our Facebook page so you listeners can, you know...
You listeners can be watchers.
Exactly. But it is an incredibly cringeworthy commercial with Ronald McDonald that kind of echoes like some sort of Pee-wee's Playhouse type shit.
Well, that's kind of what like 90s Ronald McDonald was, though.
That's got... Yeah, yeah.
And I'm kind of glad they moved away from that because it was a little creepy.
It was incredibly creepy. It's like, hey kids, come over to Ronald's house. I'll give you some nuggets.
ignoring that. yeah, it's so it's obviously it's the song. Do you believe in magic? In this commercial, it's like the wall of McDonald's opens up, and there's just this magical land behind the wall, and all these children go chasing after Ronald McDonald, and he shows them this happy, wonderful, magical land singing, Do You Believe in Magic?
And see, they've always had the McDonald's toy in their little happy meal, whatever things that they have. So it's going back to the emotional association of, oh, Ronald McDonald is a clown that makes me happy, and I'm happy when I go to McDonald's because I get toys and shit. Do you remember... Speaking of McDonald's toys, do you remember in the mid-90s when they had the... I think they were called Teeny Babies or Beanie Teeny Babies. They were like miniature versions of Beanie Babies that they sold at McDonald's.
I absolutely remember that, yes.
Dude, I fucking had every one of those motherfuckers. Because I was into Beanie Babies. I was, a kid when those were popular and I had tons of Beanie Babies. And then those came out. I'm like, oh shit, you mean I can eat tasty food and get free fucking Beanie Babies?
So yeah, that was... They had some good toys in the 90s.
I was going to say, we're jumping back into like 90s nostalgia, but I remember Teeny Babies. I remember they had these Hot Wheel things for a while.
Oh, yeah, they had the Hot Wheels cars.
There was like the Hot Wheels and the Barbies. Like, you could choose or whatever if you're a boy or a girl.
They could never do that now.
Yeah, really. Now they'd be like, oh, it has to be gender inspecific. And
I feel like I discussed this with somebody only a couple months ago, but I must not have been you. Yeah, it's funny that can they still do that? Have separate toys for boys and girls? Because I don't think they do that anymore.
I think they're kind of slowly phasing out toys in general.
That's awful. Why would they do that?
I sort of understand why. It's the backlash of evil corporate McDonald's is sucking in children into eating disgusting food by giving them toys. It's kind of poor brand association.
So I can see that.
It's more about cleaning up their brand from like a parental perspective, I guess. I don't know.
Shifting away from the 90s from McDonald's. A little bit.
Yeah, sorry.
And McDonald's. No, that's a good example, though. We're not going to play it because that wasn't one of our like featured ones.
But yeah.
It's a good example. I do want to talk about one. Now, we did mention this, I think, a number of episodes back.
Mm-hmm.
It was Biz Markie with the Lucky Charms Marshmallow Only Sweepstakes. This was not even 6 months ago. I think it was maybe like November. Basically, Lucky Charms was having, I assume it's not happening anymore. They were having this sweepstakes where I think, they were giving away 10 boxes of quote unquote marshmallow only Lucky Charms. So there's only the marshmallows in it.
Amazing.
And the sweepstakes was you had to take a selfie with yourself, some stupid shit like that, and then you do hashtag some huge long thing. So yeah, sweepstakes have definitely changed.
Hashtag give me my motherfucking marshmallows.
That might work. So the rapper Biz Markie did actually, instead of, this is a kind of a difference from the ones we've been talking about, because he actually performed a version of his famous song Just a Friend from 1989, but he was the one performing the version with the altered lyrics, and it's hilarious because he's basically poking fun at himself the whole time, and he's really old and just really weird and funny. So I crack the hell up whenever I even think about this
commercial. I was gonna say, I think that lends a bit more credibility to the idea we were talking about of them utilizing, you know, old songs to sell products, is when they can actually get the original artist to come in on it and use their fame in a funny way like that to sell something, either because they are, you know, ran out of money and need revenue, or just, you know, for the fun of it, whatever.
It shows they put a little bit more effort into it too, I think. Mm-hmm. There is one thing I want to read a little bit in a minute here, but I think if you just pull an old song and you're like, okay, let's just switch a few of the lyrics around and poop this commercial out. I mean, it's a little bit of a cop-out, I would say. That seems to be kind of the conclusion that we've been making in this conversation. But I think when you actually, you know, put the effort in to bring in the original artist and get them on board with doing an altered version of their own song in a way that's funny and entertaining, I can respect that.
Exactly. It lends more credibility to the brand, because it's like, hey, we convinced this famous person that our product is good enough to hawk, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
I totally forgot. But this is something else I realized recently about his song Just a Friend, that this commercial uses, well, an altered version of it. I didn't even realize until a couple months ago, but it hasn't been relevant until now, that the chorus of that song he actually borrowed from You Got What I Need by soul singer Freddie Scott in 1968.
What? It's like a meta level borrowing.
Yeah. And that's not really relevant to this conversation, other than it has to do with that song, and I wanted to mention it. But that was kind of like another epiphany I had with that song.
Speaking recently of complete irrelevance, okay, remember the song we talked about, Lottie Dottie, by Slick Rick and What's-His-Face?
Yeah.
There's a portion of that song, I don't remember the lyrics right now at all, but my girlfriend actually pointed this out to me, because it was playing in my car, and there's a portion of that song that is the exact chorus or tune, whatever, to this old 1960s Japanese pop song called Sukiyaki. I've never heard of the artist, some Japanese guy, but I guarantee you pull up that song from the 60s, you will have heard it, or you would have at least heard that beat. And yeah, in Lottie Dottie, they use that exact same tune. So I guess kind of matching.
Did she hear our talk about Lollie Dottie and then recognize
no,
it?
No. Or, I wish she actually listened to our damn show. But
yeah, I didn't think she did. Yeah.
No. It was playing on XM on the old school rap station they have, and that it got to that portion of the song, and she's like, "Oh God, this is Sukiyaki!" Like, what? And she showed me the original 60s song, and I'm like, oh my God, it's the same thing.
So the song that a bunch of other rap songs are referencing...
Is itself referencing a 60s Japanese pop song.
Oh, wow. It's another example of that. So two in one episode, neither of which is relevant, but that's cool. So I feel like we built up the Lucky Charms commercial quite a bit, so why don't we give our listeners the sweet stuff. First, we'll play a clip from Just a Friend by Biz Markie, and then Biz Markie also performing the Lucky Charms marshmallow only version.
Yeah, see if you can spot the difference.
Marshmallow only, but you see there's only 10 for the hashtag lucky 10. Just strike a pose and send us your selfie.
Oh God, Great stuff.
I love Biz Markie.
He's so funny in that song too, in that video, because you can tell he's just having a blast,
yeah,
making fun of himself. So I found an article on, actually it was on tvtropes.org, that actually talks about what they call the repurposed pop song, which is more or less the different ways that a song can be used in advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually identify 4 or 5 different ways that a song can be used in a commercial. I kind of wanted to just run through those really quick.
Yeah.
The first one they mentioned is called Played Straight. Usually the most expensive option. In this case, the agency bought the rights to this specific recording that everyone knows. It's pretty much untouched, except they edit it to obviously fit the length of the commercial, or to, you know, basically just jump right to the refrain or something, whatever, you know, whatever is relevant to the commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, like that's kind of similar to what we were talking about earlier with our episode 2, which is using the original song as is to sell the product.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a cover. The second one was like a cover version, which is rather than buying the rights to the actual recording, they acquire the rights for the song itself, and then they do their own version. And this ties a little bit into our episode on song rights, copyrights and stuff that we did.
Oh, yeah, that whole complex bag of cats.
Yeah, there's a lot of different, it's not just like one copyright for a song. There's lots of different levels of it, and it's pretty convoluted. But in this case, they're saying, well, instead of getting the original song, they can get the rights to do a cover of it. And then, so that's a little bit cheaper. And then an even cheaper version of that is, well, they're saying that an extension of the cover version is what we've been talking about in this episode. The song's lyrics are rewritten basically to show you, hey, this is how great the product is. And it says this can have the biggest backlash if potential consumers feel the original song is somehow cheapened or ruined. So this treatment is often reserved for older, more obscure music, which really falls in line with everything we've been saying.
Mm-hmm.
That does bring up a good point, though, because I was thinking about this, but I didn't really bring it up, is that, you know, we were saying that they use older songs for financial reasons.
Yeah.
But, you know, do you know of any examples of this where they took a new popular song and they changed the lyrics for the commercial? I can't really think of any. It's probably just too expensive.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Unless similar to the Biz Markie thing, they get the artist themselves to kind of be in on it. In which case, if they're paying for the artist to help them, then they have the money to do it, to pay for their song, you know?
Yeah. I mean, although in his case, that song is like 15 years old.
Yeah, so yeah.
It is more recent than the other examples. I mean, the other examples, you know, there was like a 40-50 year difference.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
a good question. I really can't think of any off the top of my head. Not that I watch a ton of commercials anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm not going to, I don't think I've heard a Justin Bieber song or Lady Gaga or whatever. I don't even know who's popular anymore. I'm so old. Song, you know, immediately repurposed to sell, you know, crack or whatever. I don't know.
Or McDonald's.
Probably because exactly that reason. The artist doesn't want their song cheapened by branding, and the brand doesn't want the backlash of consumers being like, oh shit, you guys ruined this popular song.
That's a good point. Yeah, I can see how that might be shooting themselves in the foot.
Double-edged sword that way, exactly.
Yeah. So. There's some other stuff in this page I was reading. That's kind of the highlights of what was in here.
Mm-hmm.
They do have a huge list of examples following this. I don't really want to run through this, but if you listeners really want to research this on your own, you can. Let's see. I want to see if there's anything else that we didn't cover before we wrap up.
Wrap it up. I'll take it. I want to say I've heard that song in a commercial just recently too, actually. I don't know.
Who sings that?
Fuck if I know. It's some 80s. It's some 80s rock group.
Huh.
Or 70s. I don't know. Well, to the Googles.
Here's a question. This is actually the first question I wrote down, but I don't know whether we really discussed it yet. Why would they use take the song and then alter the lyrics for the product rather than just play the song by itself in its original form? Can you think of any real
My guess is mostly monetary reasons. It's just like we were saying before, the original form of the song, even for them to re-perform it themselves, probably costs more than them taking a song, altering the lyrics, because then they can just come back and say, well, that's not the original song. We changed this. It's our song.
Mm-hmm.
They pull a fucking Ice, Vanilla Ice, you know, with his Under Pressure cover ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my guess. By the way, that band that sings Wrap It Up is the Fabulous Thunderbirds, who I never have heard of. It sounds very 80s.
That's it does sound very 80s. It's funny. I can see that, and especially considering it's cheaper and they get to save a little bit of effort in writing the tune themselves and even some of the lyrics, and they get to more closely tie the song to the product itself.
Exactly.
So I guess those are all, at least from their standpoint, pretty good reasons to do it.
Exactly. Oh my god, I'm sorry. In that list that you sent me of other songs, I'm watching the commercial for Gator Golf, and I totally forgot that thing existed.
Oh, I watched that one too.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my god, I remember this. More anthropomorphic, anthropomorphic nostalgia. Speaking of anthropomorphism,
tie-in.
Me and the girlfriend saw the animated movie Zootopia last night. Holy freaking crap, is that movie good? Everyone needs to go see it. And it's actually semi-relevant to our show, only because it deals with race relations in a very child-friendly fashion.
Just like us.
We are not child-friendly, Peter. I guess the best way to put it is basically in the story of Zootopia, is to summarize, it's all these different mammals living together. There's predators living together with prey that somehow live in harmony. But what you slowly come to realize in the movie is that the predators, being a minority to the prey animals, are actually kind of discriminated against because despite the fact that they supposedly live in harmony, there's the fear by the prey animals that the predators are going to revert back to, you know, the stereotypes of their species, you know, and it's such an interesting way to frame the concept of, you know, minority relations and race relations in such a kid-friendly way. It was like probably one of the deepest Disney movies I think I've ever seen. That's as far really cool. as like delving deep into like an emotional concept like that. Let's show almost like an Animal Farm type construct of our society, you know, the book Animal Farm.
Yeah.
How prejudice can sometimes be inherent, and even what was interesting about the movie, it even shows how prejudice can be so ingrained that someone who thinks they're not prejudiced can actually even be prejudiced by supposedly no fault of their own, but simply because of their experiences.
That was institutional racism, basically.
Exactly. That was really deep to me. I'm like, they actually show even the main character of the movie slipping and falling back into prejudice against, you know, whatever, another species in the movie, despite their supposedly progressive thinking. I'm like, that is insanely brilliant that they could actually, like, tackle that.
That's pretty cool. I had no idea that that Zootopia was, like, on that level of anything. I thought it was another movie. I didn't really hear anything about it at all.
It's very much a social commentary as much as it is just a, you know, a good moral kid story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go see it. I give it a 2 ass cheeks up. I don't know what my rating system is.
Well, can you have more than 2?
I give it 4.
All right, well, listeners, if you want to tell Kyle how many butt cheeks he can have in his movie rating system, tell us on Facebook at facebook.com/getyourfunk. Or if you're listening to us on SoundCloud, you can go to our page at soundcloud.com/getyourfunk. And you can follow our episodes there and also comment on each episode as well. So if you're listening to us there, just click on the comment box and type stuff.
Yeah, we always love getting feedback.
Yeah, even though we don't.
We don't get any, or we don't love it.
We don't get any.
Oh, okay.
But we love it anyway.
Please talk to us. We're so lonely.
Oh, boy.
So yeah, this has been your host Kyle.
And this has been your host Peter.
I'm gonna go get a Wonder Ball now.
Okay.
Bye.